Coming up on the show today, we talk about how organizations like churches can use social networks. And Sally and I debate the pronunciation of Sally's pick of the week. All that and more coming up on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, and this is episode 231 for April 11th, 2012. Happy Easter, everybody, and happy Easter to you, Sally. Good morning.
Good morning, Martin. Happy Easter to you. I hope it was a joyous day. We had gorgeous weather here and lots of people in church and an Easter breakfast and lots of rejoicing.
It was very nice. You broadcast the service, right?
We do, okay. Yeah. I haven't checked to see how many watched. It's a little bit different process now, so I don't exactly know. But, we're always getting people telling us that they've watched our service, and so that's a blessing.
Easter is just a fun day. Obviously, the message is tremendous, but just seeing all the people at church at the same time, just an event that truly is the highlight of the church year. And to be able to broadcast that to other people is a neat thing as well.
Yes, definitely.
You don't do an outdoor service or anything like that?
No, we start early, and that means you have to start extra early if you're in the choir and you're cooking for extra breakfast as well. So it's a early gathering, but that's nice. Nice to remember those women going to the tomb. Yep. And those early morning hours excitement.
We were down visiting my daughter and son-in-law, which we had not spent an Easter with them in a while since they'd been married. So we weren't in our normal church setting, but it was nice to celebrate with other people as well. It's a smaller, it's kind of a mission type setting, and that was kind of, it took me back to the days when I was in a mission church down in South Carolina. So it was really neat. It was really neat, and we had tremendous weather and great food and fellowship, and just a memorable Easter this year.
Very good.
Sally, we're going to start talking about another book.
An e-book find that our listeners can download in PDF format and read along with us. It's done by a company called Radian 6, and Radian 6 apparently exists to help people with their social media messaging, keeping up with what people are saying about your company and being part of the conversation. So that's their niche market. But they've written this book about how to transform your small business with social media. And it's a big 26-page ebook, nothing larger. Anything that's going to be too cumbersome for our listeners to do a quick read of. But I think that they do bring out some points in the book that we can apply to church and school communication as well.
This is kind of on the heels of our completion of the Church of Facebook. And that talked a little bit about the phenomenon of social networks and how Christians can get engaged with it and use it appropriately and the considerations there. This takes a little bit different tact. It approaches it from the organization's standpoint and how an organization like a church can take advantage of social media and some of the considerations there. It also discusses a little bit about how to listen. And that's kind of an important part of this, too, because dialogue, conversations about an organization are happening all the time. And some of them aren't initiated by the organization. They just happen organically, and that's kind of what social networks do. It's kind of these water cooler discussions about the organization, and in our case, the church. So what are our members or what are people saying about the church? That's important to listen to as well, and that's discussed in this ebook.
Yeah, and I think we have the kind of a parallel perspective. We obviously want to be in touch and engaged with our members and our local congregation, but then there are church issues at large, maybe not even Wells issues, mm-hmm. but just issues that the church is addressing in various ways and various denominations, and being able to keep a pulse on all that kind of conversation is a help as well.
There is, I think every congregation is at least thinking about social networks. And it's, I think a lot of them are struggling, trying to figure out how best to use them. Do we use Twitter? Do we need a Facebook page? If we have a Facebook page, what is its purpose? Is it purely for internal communications? Is there an outreach component? And some of the questions that are raised in this book really addressed how social media could be used by an organization. And they start out with one of the most basic questions, you know, what, this is chapter one, what is social media? And they talk about where it started. And then they get a little bit more specific and they say, well, this is where it started. Where do you start?
Mm-hmm. And I think we have to keep in mind that it's not all about us pushing out a message. Mm-hmm. And so we'll get into some of those etiquette kind of things in chapter two of the book as you read through. It's not just that you want to promote yourself or you want your message out there, but that you want to be listening effectively as well.
Mm-hmm. And then they talk about in that next chapter, how do you use social media effectively, the three R's and the three D's. So what are the three R's?
The three R's are kind of the things to do, starting with reciprocate. And reciprocate means that you're part of the conversation, you're not dominating the conversation. And this is that two-way communication that needs to go on. It's about give and take, they say. Mm-hmm. And one blogger suggests that you promote other things 12 times for each time you promote yourself. So just being a conduit that people can trust, that you're going to share good stuff with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is an interesting point when a church or a Christian even thinks about it, that Facebook in particular, social media in general, is somewhat narcissistic at its core. That's what has made it popular, and we talked about that in the Church of Facebook. It revolves around a status update or profile information. And in this context, it's important to recognize that really it's about fellowship and community and the ability of different members to interact with each other or different people around the organization to interact with each other. And that reciprocity is a very important part of that. That's why I think they bring it up very early on in the book.
Two more R's, respect and reliability. And I think both of those go to the trust issue, that if mm-hmm. you're going to if you're going to be part of their conversation, they can easily opt out if they aren't interested.
Sure.
So if you want to maintain that, then you have to be a trusted source. You have to respect and not put people down or whatever it may be. You have to share helpful information. And you have to be responsive, be reliable. Keep that two-way conversation going. Don't let it die.
Right.
So they can trust that you're going to be there virtually to respond.
And that's an important point as well, that if you get into social networks, if your organization or your congregation, school, whatever, gets into it, recognize that it takes work. And all of these, you know, reciprocity, respectability, and reliability all take work. They require that you be engaged, that there is somebody or a number of people responsible for keeping this thing going in a reasonable way, so that there are discussion starters and there are responses, and as you mentioned, there is the goal of creating these conversations, and part of a conversation is that you be involved.
Reminds me of our recent interview with Mark and Leslie Bergerman. I bet you were thinking the same thing, mm-hmm. Martin. That every congregation needs a retired couple that's willing to,
right.
you know. Be that invested in it, because it does take work. You could tell from our talk with them that they do spend a considerable amount of time promoting their various communication channels.
And it's measured. Yeah, and it's measured too. It's not random. It's there's an intentional nature to it. So what mm-hmm. are the three D's, the three things to avoid?
They have disclosure, defamation, and discrimination. And these are probably pretty obvious, but
common sense stuff.
Exactly. You know, don't give away the farm. Don't disclose anything that is private to your organization. Don't make statements about someone that are false. And it says discrimination. It only takes one offensive tweet to damage your company beyond retrieval. So, you know, make sure your conversation is measured and that you're avoiding offense in unnecessary ways.
Yep. And this applies to all social sites. They obviously Facebook and Twitter are two big ones. LinkedIn is another one. But even blogging. Blogging has a social component to it as you receive comments and as you interact around a blog post. So all of these apply to that as well. So they include that as social media.
And they also included some links to different etiquette guidebooks or blog posts, basically, that are available out on the web. So we'll have a couple of links as well if you want to read further on social etiquette on the web.
Then chapter 3, and we're just going to go through, I think, the first four chapters here, Sally. Chapter 3, how do I train my staff for social media? In many cases, it's a staff of one. But I think in every congregation, there is probably a group of people that may be interested or capable of helping with managing the social media presence that a congregation might have. You really have to determine that who is in the lead, though, or who manages it. Who is the, what's the voice? What is the, who represents the organization? And then there needs to be coordination around that.
I laughed because they started this chapter by just identifying the different type of people and their relationship with the digital world that we live in, from digital natives all the way to digital newbies. And, you know, I think it matters. There are going to be people in your congregation or on your staff that are more comfortable with these platforms and with this communication method. And it's kind of hard to fit a square peg in a round hole. I would say that you're going to damage yourself if you pick the wrong person to be your voice in the social world.
Yep. And along with that selection process, you want to make sure that it's somebody who has some availability, as we mentioned before, that to start and then stop, or start a conversation and then kind of disengage because you get busy or it's not a priority, that sends the wrong message, of course. So it needs to be somebody who's going to be engaged, passionate about it, and stays on top of it.
And then it suggests that you want to have some pretty defined guidelines for this conversation, you know, stated purposes for why you're adopting social media and what your goals are as you work toward that. I've kind of taken a step back and thinking about our Wells page on Facebook, you know, and it's not just there to share the daily devotion blindly or whatever. You know, I mean, we want to ask questions and engage with the people that follow the Wells page. So there may be an interesting Q&A question that came out, and we want to put it out there and let people talk about it or whatever. It's not just a blind splattering of a feed from our site or whatever.
Right. What I normally recommend, and I do a workshop on social media or communications in general, for website or digital communications, I guess, is to create a group or craft a group. I almost call them a communications committee rather than a technology committee, a group kind of responsible for looking at all the possible digital communication channels and putting together a plan. Could be website articles, blogging, could be social media, could be email campaigns, electronic newsletters, whatever. And this group kind of serves as that funnel through which all communications to members or non-members go. So they're kind of a resource. So the outreach committee or the evangelism committee can make use of this committee. The elders or adult discipleship group or youth discipleship would collaborate with this committee who's thinking about all the digital tools that are available, whether it be those websites or texting or whatever it is, and that they're responsible for thinking about that and maybe putting together a schedule of communication so that it's coordinated and there's a measured or a reasonable approach to how this goes out, as opposed to, well, we got to get this out, so let's throw it here. So it needs some strategy applied to it in general.
And then completing that whole process you mentioned earlier, measuring it at the end. So you put the strategy in place, and then you give it a little time, and you put in some measurements as well, so you can see if it's really worth the effort you're putting into it, or if you should reassess and go a different direction with your social media
This is
strategy.
All about stewardship. And are you using your time, money, resources in the most God-pleasing way? Maybe he doesn't want you using this particular channel, and he may let you know that by the fact that it's not reaching the people that you thought it would reach. But at the beginning, when you're putting together the plan, you kind of have to bake that into what you're doing. How am I going to measure this? What are our expectations? Did it meet those expectations? And if it doesn't, what do we do about it? Do we try to improve the quality of the communications or the flavor of the channel? Or do we use a different channel?
I think it's time for us to talk about Chapter 4, which is kind of a promotion almost for this Radiant 6 product, because it's titled, What Does a Social Media Monitoring Platform Do? So they're kind of explaining how they fit into this whole process. But you don't have to necessarily use a paid-for product to do monitoring, as we were talking about. How you do that listening, we'll look at a little bit more in depth next time. But there's some really simple things like just searching and setting up regular searches. There's something called Google Alerts where you can regularly search on particular terms and get notified anytime they come up in recent blog postings or whatever it may be.
Yep, we do that on the Synod level. So I have Google Alerts set up for Wells or Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. So anytime that those terms are mentioned, usually in a blog or in a website someplace, I get an alert that says, you know, this is what people are saying. You know, this is the article in which that search term was referenced, and it comes in real handy, comes right into your inbox. You have the ability to keep tabs on that, and every church could obviously do the same thing.
Yep. So it's not all just about you pushing out messages via these new forms or channels of social media, but it's also obviously about you listening, and there are tools that you can use to do that. And we'll probably dive into that a little bit more in our next month discussion of this ebook.
Shall we move on, Sally, to news and tech?
Sure.
Some very good news on this front.
Right. This actually came to us via a Google Plus post from Jeff Hendricks, and he notified us that Google is bringing churches back into the nonprofit loop to be able to apply for free Google Apps accounts. There's a particular article that came out about it, and we can also link to different resources and how to become a qualified Google nonprofit. You have to prove that you have the 501c status, I believe.
I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 8-10 months ago, Google made a decision that said churches aren't, at least from their program's perspective, aren't included in the nonprofits program, which was really bad news because, you know, we've talked about Google Apps before. A lot of our churches early on started using them. Schools use them. In fact, we rolled out Google Apps for our school, which is used by the church as well, because you can get it through the educational side. But now the whole nonprofit side, which is basically the same product set, just with some minor variations, is back available for free for nonprofits. So that's great news, because I think there are some definite possibilities for churches to make use of this and save some money and standardize on email and document management and all the things that go along with Google Apps. So worth checking out.
Sure. Just for those that are maybe newbies to Google Apps, it basically allows you to have cloud-based, like you said, document management, mm-hmm. as well as websites. You can use Google Sites. You can share documents. So if you want to collaborate on a document with the church administrative assistant and the church council, you could do that through the Google Docs platform. Now, you could do that with your plain old Google account as well. But this is more of a walled off area specifically for your domain. So not just using the regular Google tools, but actually installing it for your website and making use of it that way. I'm not sure if that's the greatest explanation, Martin.
Oh, well, yeah. I think most people know what Google Apps is. We've talked about it enough on the show. But, yeah, the best way to do it is to try it out. You can try a free account out without actually going even into the nonprofit side and seeing what it does for you.
Interestingly enough, in addition to the free Google Apps for nonprofits, you are also going to be included in a live streaming option that Google is launching via YouTube. So nonprofit members will be the first to be able to try out their new live streaming video option. Mm-hmm. Not sure what that'll be like. Guessing it will have quite a bit of advertisements to go along with that, since Google's really good at advertising. But yeah. Maybe another live streaming option available as well.
And more about that later in the show.
Sure. All right.
Picks of the week.
Picks of the week. And I have a really exciting one.
Sal, your picks are always exciting.
Oh, yeah. Woo. I actually got to see Ryan Rosenthal, one of our Wells Tech faithful listeners who's mm-hmm. been with us for a long time. He was at a recent confirmation party that I attended. And I told him he's kind of like my little conscience sitting on my shoulder. I can just see him saying, Sally, if it's an app only thing, I can't do it. You got to, you know, stay away from being too heavily centric on the mobile apps mm-hmm. Because he's not quite at the iPad level or anything at this point. And so I was really excited to find this because it makes use of whatever internet-connected computing device you have. It works great on mobile platforms, but it also works great in a computer lab setting, per se.
So, Ryan, and this one's for you.
That's right, Ryan.
Listen we take
to my Ryan conscience. And this is called Socarative, and Socarative is at socarative.com. And what this is it's a student response system. So this is an automated free way to poll your class and have them take quizzes, basically, using whatever device they have in front of them. And so I know that, for instance, with smart boards, they have devices that you can purchase in addition to the smart board where they can take quizzes this way, do the student response. And immediately, if you have your screen projected, a graph will show up as everybody's answering the questions or whatever it may be. You can have that option. Well, now you can do that for free with Socarative, and you don't even have to ask questions. You can just put out A, B, C, D, and E options or whatever it may be and tell them the question verbally and have them use the response system. So it can be really fast and easy for teachers to make use of. If you go there, you can create an account, and then teachers go in at t.socarative.com and they get access to their account and they get a room number assigned to them. Students access it at m.socarative.com or through the Socarative student app on a mobile device. And all they have to do is put in that teacher room number that you had, and they see the questions that you're currently asking. So I have a room number I set up, 69385. I'll put it in our Wells Tech show notes, and you can go and take my quiz as an example. And you don't have to do it on a mobile device. You can just do it on your regular computer and get a feel for what it's like from the student perspective. It's really straightforward. They have a mode where you can have the kids race to answer the questions and kind of compete as teams to answer questions and things like that too. So lots of possibilities there. If you want to check out their blog, it's Socarative Garden. And I found a user's guide there and a how-to video series that's posted out on Vimeo. So I'll have lots of links to share in the show notes if you want to get started and try it out in whatever classroom setting. Maybe it'll help in a catechism setting or whatever it may be.
So just so I understand this, you create the quiz or whatever interactive tool you want to use. And then the kids would need to log in on whatever they whatever device they have in front of them. It couldn't
Correct.
Be a Chromebook or an iPad mm-hmm. or a regular lab computer, something
mm-hmm.
like that. Okay, got
mm-hmm.
it. Okay.
Exactly.
So engage the class using any device. My guess, Sally, is it might be pronounced Socrative or Socrative.
Well, you watched their videos.
Did they say... Because it's got to be a playoff of Socrates,
yeah,
right?
I don't know, but when I watched their videos, I think they said Securitive.
Okay, so that's a homework assignment for everybody.
There you go.
How do we pronounce this thing? Okay. Because it doesn't, the way you're pronouncing it, maybe the way they're pronouncing it, you wouldn't be able to spell it. So it's S-O-C-R-A-T-I-V-E, right?
Yep.
Socrative. Okay.
Maybe that's how it's said.
Anyway. This looks nice. The site looks really nice. They've done a nice job with this, and I'm excited to try that. So that quiz that you put out, how would people get to that?
Well, they'd just go to the m.s, however you pronounce it. I'm intimidated now. .com, and I'll have a link in the show notes. The key to the whole thing is that when teachers set up an account, they get this room number, number assigned to them.
And that's always the same?
Yep,
okay.
My number is 69385. So
that's your room
number.
You go
into my room,
okay.
Then you'll see the currently active quiz that I have available there.
I'm going to go there. So
Socrative.com/
what was it?
Nope, it's m.socrative.com.
Oh, but I can do it in my web browser, right?
Right, you just have to put the M first to get to the student side.
Okay, and it's
69385.
69385. This is great radio, you know. Oh, I get a not found. 69385.
Well, we'll get it fixed before we post
Maybe
our show notes.
Maybe I misspelled it, yeah.
I did test it.
m.socrative.com/
Nope, there's no forward slash. You just go to that web address.
Oh,
as you enter the room number.
I gotcha.
Prompts you on the screen.
I don't follow directions well. You know that already. So, okay. So
and it right now it says please wait for teacher to start the next activity. But I'll definitely have an activity there for
that
you
that we can all try.
Exactly.
Okay. It's loading, loading, loading. So this will work on any platform. So they've made it mobile ready. Is really
correct.
The
There's actually
catcher.
A teacher app and a mobile app for mm-hmm. iOS, or you could do it through the Safari browser as well.
Okay,
lots of different options.
Okay, join room number 6. One more time.
69385.
My memory is not very good either. So.
It's like we should write a song.
Yes, Sally.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
All right. Well, please wait for teacher to start next activity. So you actually, can you only do one at a time?
I think I can, but it can be a long quiz. It doesn't have to just be a one-question quiz. And I did demo it, but I don't have an active one right now. So I'll have one active before the show notes are posted.
Cool. I'm looking forward to it. All right. Shall we move on to my pick?
I think it's time.
My pick.
If you pronounce it right.
Well, I made up the name. So
okay, there you go.
This is actually not original to me, but I wanted to share this with everybody. I just created my own little video to show the tip. This is not a pick. This is kind of a tip of the week. I call it the tangle-free cord tip. And I learned this about a year and a half ago. I don't remember where I saw it. I didn't do a lot of research as to totally give credit to this, but it was probably on Lifehacker or some site like that. But one problem that I have is I got a lot of cords, and any geek has a lot of cords. You got a cord for your smartphone, you got headphones, you have USB cords for external hard drives. You know, you got a lot of cords, and you put them in your bag, or your pocket, or whatever, and they get tangled up. Especially your headphone cords. So you kind of wrap them up, and you throw them in there, and then. It's a nightmare to get them unwrapped because they're all tangled up. So there's a quick and easy way to wrap your cord so that you could unwrap it each time without a tangled mess. And I put together a little YouTube video, but I'll kind of describe it so that people will be able to judge whether it's worth watching the video or not. It's only a minute and a half, so if it's worthless to you, you've only lost a minute and a half of your life. But you take the cord and you put the jack end, I guess, the end that plugs into your device in the palm of your hand, kind of facing south, so it's facing your wrist, and you run it up your palm, maybe about 3 inches, and then you kind of hold it there with your thumb and your two middle fingers. So with your two middle fingers, you're kind of holding the cord in place, and that means that your pinky and your index finger are extended. And then you take your left hand, you grab the remainder of the cord, and you begin wrapping it around those two fingers in kind of a figure eight. So those are two little prongs that you're wrapping your cord around, just in a figure eight. Until you get to the end, you have nothing more to wrap. You pull it off your fingers in that figure eight. So you kind of have a little bow in your fingers now. And then you take that 3 inches that you didn't wrap around your fingers, which was sitting in your palm, and you coil that around the middle of your figure eight until maybe you have an inch left. And then what you do with that tail is you shove it through one of the holes that that made up one of the sides of the figure eight. And you pull it, you can pull it tight, so that kind of draws the noose that you put around the middle a little bit tighter. And that's it. It stays together. And then when you go to use the cord again, whatever it is, headphone or whatever, you push the end back out through the hole, unwrap it, and it basically stays tangle free. At least most cords do this. If it's a really soft rubbery cord, then sometimes it's a little more challenging, but usually like iPhone or iPad or most headphone jacks all work really well with this. And then you've got this nice little bundle. You can easily find it. You pull it out, you unwrap it, and you're ready to go. So a little productivity tip. You probably save, I don't know how much time I was spending every day on untangling a cord, maybe, what, a minute or two? So a minute or two every day times 365, and you can kind of see that it does save a little bit of time and certainly aggravation on my part. So that is my tip of the week, and there'll be a link to that video which I recorded on my iPhone, how to do it.
Cool. Thanks for sharing. I actually watched the video as you were describing it, so I recommend that. Listen to Martin describe it and watch the video at the same time. Yeah. So looks pretty straightforward. I think I could handle it.
Yeah, you need fingers. So yeah. If you've got fingers, you've got the tool.
Cool beans.
And a little common sense. The ability to follow directions. So we try and make it easy here on the Wells Tech Podcast. We have some training coming up, Sally. You want to tell us about that?
Right. This summer we're going to be using Google Hangouts to facilitate our Final Web for Teachers and Final Web for Dummies training offerings. We're going to offer it the week of July 9th and then repeat it the week of July 16th. So hopefully between those two sets of dates, some of that will fit with your schedule. Final Web is our web hosting partner. We have more than 550 Wells congregations, schools, and other organizations using Final Web for their websites. And Final Web makes it really easy to have a school or church website. They give you professional-looking templates, and they give you a lot of out-of-the-box stuff that you can make use of on your site. But these trainings just help you take it to the next level. So if you've struggled a little bit to get your site looking the way you want it to, this may be the perfect training for you. And as I mentioned, for the first time, we're going to be doing it all online using Google Hangouts. Mm-hmm. So you can come hang out with Martin and I, connect with us via webcam and headphone and microphone, and be able to ask questions real time, watch us demonstrate things, and do the hands-on practice that we would do normally in a face-to-face class, but this summer we're doing online.
So no travel necessary, just the travel that it takes for you to get in front of a computer with the appropriate equipment. And I'm looking forward to doing this, Sally.
Sure, me too. And the cost is just $48.99 per day, or you can do the 3-day dummies class for a discounted price of $128.99. We'll have links in the show notes. There are registration forms and additional information available online.
Very good. Sign up soon. We do have limited space because of the technology. We can't have more than 9 sign up per session. So if you are interested, don't wait till the last minute. They might be full. Sally, we probably should be advertising our 7 Best.
Right. 7 Best is an ongoing series that we do this year on the Wells Tech Podcast. And in May, we want to talk about the 7 Best photo organizing and editing tools. With summer coming up, I think it's a prime time for taking lots of photos. And we want to give our listeners the best tools to get the job done. So please tell us what your favorite tools are so we can include them in our 7 Best list.
And tell us, Sally, how can they communicate their 7 Best with us?
Well, one easy way is to go to Pinterest. Oh. I wanted to say that one first.
Pinterest is now leading off. Okay.
That's it.
I get it.
We have lots of social communication channels that we monitor and listen to regularly, including Pinterest, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. We, of course, have our Wells Tech show notes site at wellstech.wells.net, where you can leave us a comment. You can email us at wellstech@wells.net, or you can call our voicemail line. Martin, do you have that number handy?
405-4-WELLS. 405-367-9357.
And we also have the Wells Tech Listserv, which if you aren't part of that great community, you'll want to join
Absolutely.
It. If you visit our website.
That's even better than Pinterest.
I don't know. If you visit our website, there are links to all of these in our little row of social media icons up in the upper right area.
No shortage of ways to get in touch with us. So
just,
no excuses.
We're listening.
We're
just
listening.
Just communicate.
Yes.
That's right.
We're listening and watching. Is it time for community feedback?
Yep. I think we have a good amount of community feedback to share today.
Anything on Pinterest?
Not today, but I'm sure we'll be flooded next week.
Okay.
Just give them time.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, first up, we want to talk about a follow-up to last week's 7 Best Show. It was kind of ironic. We did a 7 Best Show with email productivity tips and tools, and almost as soon as we stopped recording, we received an email from the Write Inbox folks. That's at writeinbox.com. This is a Gmail plugin that allows you to schedule your emails out in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for that kind of functionality, this is maybe a runner up to our 7 Best email tips and tools.
I like it. Yep.
You might want to check
Simple,
out the Write Inbox plugin.
Yes.
They actually contacted us to let us know that they've added yet another feature. So besides scheduling, you can also get a tracking
mm-hmm.
kind of feature on your Gmail. So if you want to know that the person you sent it to opened the Gmail, they'll add that to your Gmail email and allow you to track it. So perhaps Write Inbox is just the tool for you. They had a YouTube video showing an example of how to track an email, and we'll have links to all of that in our show notes.
By the way, Chrome, Firefox only. So,
okay,
sorry
good
about
to know.
Safari and IE users, but Chrome, Firefox, it's a plugin. So,
okay. We had a voicemail this week. We asked and we received. We heard from Gail Potratz. And Martin, are you able to play us that voicemail?
I will give it my best shot.
Hi, Martin and Sally. This is Gail Potratz calling. Just listening to the show here today and the 7 Best Email Tips. And right now you're into, I think it's community feedback, where you're talking about browsers and the Atomic Web Browser for the iPhone or the iPad. I'm not sure if I mentioned this earlier one other time, but thought it would be fitting here. One of the drawbacks of the Atomic Web is that it still doesn't handle Flash on the Apple stuff. But if you want a browser that you can use on the Apple stuff that does handle Flash, that you can download for free the app called Rover, R-O-V-E-R, just like the dog. And that will actually handle Flash for you on your websites on your iPhone or your iPad. So It's pretty cool. It's got some glitchiness to it. It doesn't always work seamlessly, but once in a while when you're desperate and you want one of those things to work, this will do it for you. So there you go. You got your email, your voicemail today. Okay? Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, you, Gail. It's like she dropped everything during the show and said, I'm going to give them their voicemail, which is awesome.
That's awesome.
So, I have never tried Rover. In fact, I hadn't heard of it, or maybe I had heard of it but never followed up on it. But, yeah, there are some times when you do want to play, believe it or not, you want to play Flash on your device. I wrote up an iPad review over the weekend, and that was still one of my negatives for the iPad, is you can't play Flash, and there are sites that still require it. So probably worth the download and with the ability to play that for those sites that still have Flash.
And I did do the quick download this morning, yeah. Martin. Interestingly enough, it is very education-oriented, and the icon for it is this little dog on a skateboard. So it is written with schools and education settings in mind.
Sure.
And when you open the app, it actually shows you three different websites, Discovery Education, Fun Brain, and Mathletics, and has links, easy links to different resources available on those three websites, which obviously are very Flash-centric because they're promoting them here. Then you get a featured list, which is, I'm sorry, that's probably the featured. You get more content list, which has kind of a scrollable view. You say that.
Easy for you to say. Yes.
Yeah. Of elementary school pages, middle school pages, and high school pages. So again, very much education centric. But having said all that, there's a browser bar up there and you can type in whatever web address you want to go to. I read a little bit on it. It only works with Wi-Fi and it is based off the iSwiffer Flash based web browser for iPad, which is also a free download but only free for 1 week. Then you have to pay $5 to get iSwiffer. And that one's kind of game oriented, so they kind of put these mask or introductory screens on both of these apps to kind of guide you to different links and things. But looks like a good alternative for getting your Flash based content.
And did you try it out? Did it work?
I did, and it worked fine for me. It does. Both of them actually are Wi-Fi only, so even if you have a 3G device, this particular functionality only works over Wi-Fi connection.
So probably because of the bandwidth requirements. So
sure.
Okay.
So interesting though that you mentioned your blog post. We'll have to include a link to that in the show notes as well. What's your impression so far? Can you give us a nutshell?
Very positive. Some of the same things that iPads 1 and 2, although I don't have a 2, some of the same criticisms I had of it still apply. One was Flash, of course, but there are some real benefits, I think. I think they're going in the right direction. So maybe we'll do a show on just featuring some of those pluses and minuses to tablet computing in general. So it's not just necessarily the iPad, but tablet computing and how you work with your fingers and virtual keyboards and all that good stuff. So,
okay, and speaking of mobile computing, we heard from Pastor Clint Rogos, who's at St. Paul in South Haven, Michigan. Clint's been corresponding with us quite a bit lately regarding the iPad. He just got a new iPad, and he has found a new favorite app that he wanted to share with us. I think it costs $3.99. It's called iFiles, and this allows you to transfer files between your iOS device and your computer. And what's nice about it is it syncs with Dropbox, Google Docs, Box.net, and others. I'm not sure if it has iCloud synchronization yet, but many of the other file storage cloud-based applications are listed. So Clint says it's a real time saver for him.
Yeah, and he got it working on his home network, so that, or office network, I don't remember which, or both, so that it's just as simple as mapping a drive on your. I think he's doing it on a PC, in fact, and loading up a folder or a drive on his PC, and he sees the files that he has loaded on the iPad. So Very cool.
Good stuff. Thanks for sharing, Clint. Yeah. I had a recent tweet from Perry Lund, who shared an interesting link, an introductory guide to iPads for teachers. And this is from the Whiteboard blog. And just a good list of basic apps that teachers would make use of. And then a link to, or several links to, a lot of different articles about using iPads in the classroom. So a good kind of compilation there.
Very good.
So check that
Thanks,
out.
Perry.
A couple of DIGO links worth mentioning from Randy Nepson. He linked to Do eBooks Make It Harder to Remember What You Just Read? And that's
very timely.
An interesting concept. I'm not sure if I remember what I just read, but yeah, an article from time.com and just kind of looking at the effects of the shift to eBooks.
Sure.
And whether it's actually helping with our comprehension skills. Mm-hmm. And then also he tweeted or shared a link on DIGO to a 25% off coupon code that you can use on the Accordance website. It's actually PICKAP, P-I-C-K-A-P, will give you 25% off any one item from Accordance. Accordance is a standard among Mac users, I believe, for Bible study,
yep.
In-depth Bible study. And we've had shows in the past where we've looked at Accordance in detail. This is called a pick-a-product sale, so you get to choose what you want to save on, and it's good through the end of April, April 30th.
Very good.
And then lastly, we'll make mention that Ryan Rosenthal wrote to us looking for a resource site or a sharing site for administrative assistants. So we're a place where church secretaries and school secretaries can share ideas and resources. We do have an area on our WellsTech Wiki dedicated to church and school administration. And one nice part of that section of the wiki is that we have a page where there are different bulletin formats and forms and things that people have shared and we've posted on the wiki. But it's not really a conversational kind of group. He's looking for more of a place where people can connect and discuss things, I believe. And while the wiki has that functionality, it really hasn't taken off there. So if there's anyone out there that's interested in trying to organize that or has an idea for a way to organize that, we'd certainly be open to sharing that for sure. So that's going to do it for community feedback for this week, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Sally. Nice job as usual.
Next week, Pinterest, for sure. I'll be pinning if nobody else is.
It'll be Sally and her pins, yes.
There you go.
If you don't want a whole show on Pinterest, then make sure you contribute your own feedback. That is a motivation. All right. Should we talk about next week?
Yeah.
Kind of special next week.
Be interesting.
We think, we're a little nervous, that we maybe want to do a Google Hangout next week. And so at our regular recording time, that's Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock Central Time. That's April 17th at 9 o'clock. We're going to do a Google Hangout, and we're going to use the live feature, which will stream it to the internet. And we'd like to invite 8 of our closest friends, anybody who wants to show up, in other words, to join the Hangout and talk about maybe ministry application for it. So if you just want to come in and hang out, you do need to show your face, so you need a webcam. You do need a microphone. You do need a Google account. So if you go to your Google account, which many people do, and go to your Google Plus page, you need to search for Wells and put Wells in one of your Google Plus circles. That will enable you to get the notification at 9 o'clock when we start that, hey, we're ready to hang out and you can join it. We can only take 8 because there's a total of 10. So Sally and I are 2. And then whoever's available, we recognize that some people are, you know, busy at 9 o'clock on Tuesday mornings. But if you're available and would like to hang out with us, we'll probably do a 30 minutes or so just to kind of kick the tires and have a discussion about Google Hangouts. So if you're interested in that, that is next week's show.
We should title it "Let's Break Google Hangouts" and see if we can.
Okay.
Maybe not.
We've tried it and it works, so we're pretty confident that we'll be able to get at least part of our show done this way. But if you'd like to be a part, come on over.
We'd love to have you.
Yeah. I should note at this point that we were planning on playing an interview with Mark and Leslie Bergeman from Good Shepherds in West Dallas, Wisconsin. Unfortunately, we ran out of time, and we are going to play that next week. So be sure to tune in to next week's show to hear our interview with Mark and Leslie about their work on their church's website, just a great example of how a congregation can leverage a website. So that'll be coming up next week. Let's close the show with the music of Corbin Creek, a Easter song entitled Empty Grave. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
walk away from the grave. In faith you're saved, I took your place.